Welcome to Versatile Strategy, a Marvel Crisis Protocol podcast. On this podcast, we hope to offer a unique perspective on roster creation, tournament and league reviews of those created rosters, and reviews of upcoming characters. I'm John.
And I'm Nick.
And on this episode, we have some mini extravaganza news and a tournament review of a Criminal Syndicate roster.
That's right, that's right. And what a mini extravaganza it was. I guess mini extravaganza in quotes. They did show us quite a bit of new stuff, so I guess we can go ahead and jump right into it. You want to go ahead and start us off with that sweet, sweet Heimdall card, John?
Yeah, for those who don't know, Mini Extravaganza was pushed back due to reasons, but AMG decided to release some of the spoilers they had for us along the way. So among those were complete character cards for Heimdall and Scourge. So let's read through Heimdall real quick. Heimdall the All-Seen, a.k.a. Heimdall, has a physical defense of 3, an energy defense of 3, and a mystic defense of 3. He has 6 health on his healthy side, 3 threat, size 2, and moves medium. Important to know, the only thing that changes on his injured side is his health goes down to 5. Let's get into his first attack. It's a builder, strike, range 2, 5 dice. Nothing special here, power equal to damage dealt. He has a spender, Horfund.
That's Horfund. The name of his sword.
Yep. So that's going to cost him 3 power to use, still range 2, but this is a 7 die attack. And then it's got a pretty cool line of text on here. If this attack deals damage after the attack is resolved, the character may push the target character away medium. And I guess what's there is almost as important as what's not there, because there is no size restriction.
Yep. A medium push away, too, is a pretty far ways.
Yeah, and the only condition is that he deals damage on 7 dice. You're probably going to deal at least 1 point of damage, so pretty consistent there on the push. Yep. Let's get into his superpowers real quick before we look at him a little bit deeper. He has the innate superpower as Guardian, where he gains an additional power in the power phase. We've seen that before in all the other ones. And then let's get into his other superpowers. He has a reactive superpower, Forfend. This one's going to cost him 2. When an enemy character ends a move it within 2 of this character, this character may use this superpower. Immediately make a strike attack against the enemy character. This superpower can only be used once per turn. So he's got a reactive counterattack. And his next reactive superpower is called All-Seeing Eyes. This is also going to cost him 2 power. When an allied character within 3 is attacking, defending, or dodging during the modified dice step, this character may use this superpower. The allied character may reroll up to 2 of its own dice. Pretty cool, but there's a little bit extra on here. Alternatively, when an ally character within 3 rolls dice for a crisis card or team tactics card, this character may use the superpower. The allied character may reroll up to 2 of its own dice. And finally, he has Guardian of the Bifrost. It's an active superpower. It's going to cost him 3. Choose this character or an ally character within 4 and place them within 2 of their current position. A character can only be placed by this superpower once per turn. I think he's everything we wanted him to be and more.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be in so many lists. Immediately jumps. Steve Avengers jumps to my mind. Spider Foes is another one that jumps to mind. He's so good. I mean, I haven't played him yet, but on paper, he's so good.
Yeah, the fact that he has a straight-up counterattack if they end a movement within 2 of him, That's unique. I don't think we've seen that one before. The ability to reroll on crisis cards or team tactics cards is insane. Like, if you have to play against Skrulls or Alien Corps, you can just pay 2 power on Heimdall, who's hanging out in the back, for someone to recheck it, especially if they have some way to augment. Like, you're interacting with an objective in Web Warriors, so you can reroll a skull. Like, it seems really good. Or if you have Corvus and Thanos or anyone with a reality gem, you can fish for those skulls to increase your odds to find it. Like, I think he's going to be everywhere when he comes out.
Yeah, he is crazy. And Guardian of the Bifrost, like, we kind of, I think, expected something like this when we were brainstorming what he might look like. I think I had mentioned maybe him having Lockjaw's teleport, but this is pretty much word for word Red Skull and Clea, their teleports, and it makes sense.
Yeah, I think we're a little surprised to see it not be the same distance of Lockjaw's. Lockjaw's is within 3, place 3. So he can do it a little bit farther. He can be within 4 and place 2. Important to note here that while a character can only be affected by it once per turn, if Heimdall has the power, he can do it to multiple characters, just not the same character. So that's kind of exciting. It might be a good way to reposition late round, get your characters back on points. He has so much versatility. And then we get back to the Spender where that push, that on size restricted push is like, I'm really excited to get him on the table.
Yeah, yeah. And like something that I really like with him is if you have the Forefend, so you get the free attack out of activation, you might get that 2 power back. Like, and then you've got power up for his reroll too. Like, it's silly.
Yeah, he almost
silly good.
He almost reads like a, except for his defenses and his health, like his attacks and his superpowers almost read like a 4 threat character. He seems like a really high end of the curve 3 threat. I think he does kind of still have the same kind of feeling you get from Valkyrie in that he is going to have a really good way to spend up to 10 power. How many times have you played Valkyrie where you spend 10 power a turn, right? When you're Dragon Fanging and Warrior of Legend, you can definitely burn the power. And I think he, with the Asgardian innate superpower, he may not be power starved per se, but he's definitely going to want a lot on him and he's going to be burning it pretty quickly. So that might be the only throttle this guy has because he seems really good.
Yeah, he spends power very well.
Okay. Do you want to take us through Scourge, Nick?
Yeah, yeah. So we also have Scourge the Executioner, also known as Scourge. We've got a 3 threat character, 6 health, size 2, medium movement, 4 physical defense, 3 energy defense, and 2 mystic defense. The only change on his injured side is that he goes from 6 health to 5 health. So looking at his attacks, he has 2. The first of them is Battle Axe. This is range 2, 6 dice. After this attack is resolved, this character gains 1 power and a wild bleed trigger. His second attack is a Spender. It's called the Executioner. Range 3, 8 dice. Costs 4 power. If the target character has the bleed special condition, you get to reroll up to 2 of your attack dice with this attack, and then it has the wild bleed condition as well. Going over his superpowers, he's of course got the Asgardian innate superpower, gaining an additional power every turn. His active superpower is Storm Giant Strength. This is 3 power. Choose an interactive terrain feature size 3 or less within 2 and throw it short. Can only be used once per turn. He has a reactive superpower, Right Hand Man. This costs 2. When an enemy character within 2 of this character targets another allied character with an attack, this character may use the superpower. This character becomes the target of the attack regardless of range and line of sight. So that is similar to the Black Dwarf and Luke Cage style bodyguards. And then he also has Aggressive as his second innate superpower. So after an attack targeting him is resolved, if he takes damage, he can advance short towards the attacking character. I don't think we've seen a bodyguard with Aggressive before outside of She-Hulk, but she has the regular bodyguard, not the Luke Cage-style bodyguard, so it'll be interesting to see how it works with him as opposed to how it works with She-Hulk.
Yeah, I've been calling that one kind of taunt if they're within 2 of the attacking.
Yeah, I like that.
And like, so when you're looking at a guy with Aggressive and Taunt, he seems really good too, and there's some pretty glaring synergies here with Heimdall. So if he can get if Scourge here can get a Battle Axe off, get that bleed, follow up with an Executioner. If he has the bleed, he gets the rerolls on the dice, and then Heimdall can give him an additional 2 rerolls from his superpower. You're looking at an 8 die attack with 4 rerolls. Like, how often have we played Asgard and Thor's only problem is when you either get the God of Thunder or Fat Thor and Heimdall's going to let him reroll 2? Well, Executioner has the potential to reroll half of his attacks. Like, holy cow.
Yeah. I think he's also only the second character we've seen with a 6 die builder. I think the only other one is Black Dwarf, right? I guess at this threat level, I guess, if we're talking about, you know.
You get an Emodok and Ebony Maw. Sure. Yeah, but he's 3.
Yeah, he's 3. I think that's the highest builder dice among all 3 threats without like any type of modification. I could be wrong, but off the top of my head, I think it is.
Yeah, the only thing on here I may not be going for all the time is this throw, the Storm Giant Strength. It's situational and it's there, but I mean, God,
it's size 3, though.
It is. Yeah, and one of the things I've been doing against Brotherhood in particular is denying them throw potential, so I've been throwing my own stuff. So he may have a place there. Just get a coffee shop or something out of the way so they can't throw it at you, right?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, obviously they're still gonna get their power if they're playing Magneto, but better you throw it than them. So
right, I'd rather throw it behind me and not have to use my brace on something like that.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I used to play Asgard for a couple months. I was challenged to play them for one of our tournaments and I had a lot of fun, and like when these two characters were teased, I immediately got the excitement to get them back on the table.
Yep.
I think that
I like them both.
Yeah, I think Scourge fits right in. He's going to be able to bodyguard for your Valkyrie, who's kind of that glass cannon. And then Heimdall with the rerolls and the teleports. You kind of suffered with Asgard on the wider secures. And so he's really going to help you kind of jump around. And then if you have power to charge, I think they're really great additions to the affiliation overall.
So if you're going to build Asgard again, what would your core be then? If you're obviously you've got to take Thor, and what maybe two of the three threats would you probably reach for first?
I definitely would have all three in the list, that being Valkyrie, Scourge, and Heimdall. And then I would adjust based on the crisis and go from there. If I was going narrower, I probably would bring Valkyrie and Scourge. If I was going wider, I might bring Heimdall to get the teleports in. Or if I was worried about killing some high threat characters, I might bring Heimdall for the rerolls. I think it's dependent on your opponent's roster.
But that's fair.
But overall, man, they are... Wow, I'm very impressed with these two characters.
Range 2 builder with Battle Axe is kind of unfortunate. Small base with a medium move, I guess that's fine. I think that maybe sacrifice will be something you see a lot of with Executioner, just so he gets that aggressive, so he can get closer to potentially do the right hand man bodyguard, because as he stands, he might not be a big target.
Yeah, that's a good shout too, Nick. He kind of gives me some Crossbones vibes, except for he's obviously not short moving, and yep, he doesn't have the inured to pain, but he has the range 3 spender with the range 2 gainer. When we say gainer, he only gains one power, not power equal to damage dealt. Kind of feels like an updated modifying Crossbones vibe, who I personally like playing, so I'm excited to get one in affiliation for Asgard.
Also important to note that if he doesn't spend any power turn 1, he can use his spender right away on turn 2, and that's range 3, so he's going to be doing that quite a bit, I think.
Yes, sir. Well, this wasn't the only news that we gave us from the not mini extravaganza. Nick, do you want to run us through they teased us 4 new packs. They did not hold back. Do you want to run us through a couple of those?
They certainly did show us some pretty neat stuff. So we got one of these little promo videos that AMG has been doing whenever they have new waves of things come out. They did one for the X-Men most recently with Juggernaut that was kind of in that 90s X-Men style. Before that, they had one that was for the Convocation and Dormammu. This one, we got a new Captain America sculpt that seems to be kind of in his classic outfit, along with a Human Torch. It's not the Human Torch you might think of, though. It is the Jim Hammond Human Torch, who's a sort of android, I guess. I'm not super familiar with the character, but it is not the Johnny Storm Human Torch that people might have been hoping for. In addition to that, we got a look at a Nick Fury Sr. and Howling Commandos box. It is 3 minis on 1 base, like the Grunts, but this one specifically, it's in a box by itself, so it's not a Grunt, necessarily. It'll be interesting to see how that one is implemented. And then, of course, if you've got good guys, you got to get some bad guys too. So we have a new Red Skull. It looks to be on a 50mm base with some Hydra agents. So some more grunts on that end, as well as Arnim Zola and Baron Strucker. Two pretty high ranking Hydra baddies. And along with that, AMG had their first Twitch stream in some time today, as we're recording this, and they did confirm on the stream that Hydra will be a new affiliation with Red Skull as its leader, so there's something to think about there as well. These models look crazy. I can't wait to put the Arnim Zola model on the table with MODOK and just have a couple of big-headed scientist bros. What are you thinking about these?
That's an awesome list idea. Just take people with oblong shaped heads. That might be the jank for my next pick my affiliation.
Yeah, maybe throw Medusa in there too with her big hair.
So yeah, the Captain America, like you mentioned, kind of has that more classic suit. For lack of a better term, it kind of has the scale mail looking suit, yep. Kind of like the typical World War II Captain America. I have no idea who the original Human Torch is. I can only imagine how like heartbroken you were that it wasn't Johnny Blaze. But yeah, some sort of android Human Torch man.
Yep.
Correct shout on the Nick Fury being on the same base as the Commandos. So it's not a leader, or he doesn't have a grunt mechanic, but it's interesting to see what mechanics this character will be bringing to the game, because it will be different than the grunts because they are on the same base. The new Red Skull model looks insane. He's got like cube energy coming up through broken rocks up through the base. So that one's really cool. He comes with Hydra Troopers. And then, yeah, like you said, Baron Strucker and Zola, they did confirm that they will be a Hydra affiliation. So I know a lot of us were getting kind of frustrated that Cabal was just kind of becoming this generic bad guy group. So it's nice to see Hydra get some dedicated characters. And maybe you don't get such a feel-bad moment that Magneto's in Cabal, because hopefully he's not going to be in Hydra, because he's certainly not a Nazi, right?
Right.
But yeah, all these characters look super cool. I'm excited to get them. Nothing wrong with adding some depth, and it'd be interesting to see how these new mechanics play in.
Yeah.
And that if maybe there would be a card in the Captain America box that lets you unlock something new with Core Box, Steve. So
yeah,
we've seen that in the past.
Yeah. So something I actually noticed about that, because I was doing some digging whenever this stuff was revealed. Because you know that if you go on AMG's website, you can look at like the different boxes and it'll list the cards that are in it. Well, the Nick Fury Sr. with the Howling Commandos and the Captain America and Human Torch box both come with a card. I believe it's Over the Top is the name of the card. And I just thought it was kind of interesting that two boxes that are seemingly going to be released very close, if not at the same time, have the same tactics card. So I'm wondering if maybe that was just it's a placeholder, or if there's something else there that we're not quite sure what's happening yet. Either way, I mean, obviously, I'm going to buy them both. You're going to buy them both. We're going to play them.
Yeah, they also have a card called Infiltration in the Nick Fury Sr. and Howling Commando box. So maybe they'll have... We haven't seen a character have a mechanic to deploy off of your home deployment zone yet.
Ooh, a deep strike?
Kind of like a deep strike, or...
I like it.
Yeah, some sort of deploy farther, like range 5 from an enemy, but you can deploy off of your deployment zone. That might be a cool kind of mechanic for them to have.
Yeah, I hadn't even considered that. The only thing I can think of that's even similar to that now is like Mr. Sinister cloning banks, or like Dark Restoration from Dormammu, and those are like things that happen late game, so we'll see.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And if that wasn't enough, they teased us with one of the most impressive models I've seen out of the range of Marvel Crisis Protocol, and that is Malekith.
Yes, and this is not your Thor the Dark World boring 15-minute fight Malekith. This Malekith is riding a demon tiger, and it's pretty badass.
Yeah, I know I've said in the past that, like, Goblin on the Glider Ram was one of my favorite models, and then we were all pretty impressed with like the Rainbow Bridge coming off Heimdall. There's been so many great models that AMG's come out with, but like this one is absolutely over the top. He's awesome. They have confirmed he will be a new leader for the Cabal, so Cabal gets a third leader. He's like riding this tiger with dragon wings, and he's holding on to the back of his scruff, and his sword is ready to strike, and he is so imposing. I cannot wait to see what he does.
Yeah,
he's coming in with a tactics card called the Black Bifrost, so I'm kind of excited to see what that is. Yeah, lost for words how cool this model is.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Does that cover all of our news, Nick?
I think so. Just a quick note as well, if for anyone who hadn't caught the AMG stream today, along with the Red Skull and Hydra stuff that they mentioned, they did mention that the date for Mini Stravaganza, like the do-over, is potentially going to be in July. Obviously, we won't know for sure until they post something. And they also said that there will be more info on the card pack, seemingly maybe the rotation that they mentioned a while back, coming soon, as in before that mini extravaganza. So maybe within the next couple weeks, we'll know some more about that. But this is just me reiterating what I saw and what I heard on the stream. So take it with a grain of salt, because you never know what could happen.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of anxious to see how they're going to handle the card back. There's so many ways they could go with it.
Yeah.
I have to see what they come up with for that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm wary of rotating card formats, having played other card games that kind of rely on that to sell product. But I've never seen it done in a miniatures game before, so we'll see.
Yeah, with that, should we move into the main topic today?
That's right. So we're going to be talking about your experience at the LVO Invitational Qualifier that we ran at our store here last weekend.
Yeah, so real quick, I'll run you guys through the list that we had drafted on here in a previous episode. It was the Criminal Syndicate roster that used the Versatile Strategy card. So my 10 characters I played were Kingpin, Shadowland Daredevil, Green Goblin, Hood, Mysterio, Black Cat, Dr. Octopus, Toad, Wong, and Lizard. For tactics cards, I took Field Dressing and Brace for Impact for restricted cards. And the other were Sacrifice, Indomitable, Advanced R&D, Well-Laid Plans, Shadow Organization, Monkey Brain is Lizard Home, All According to Plan, and Versatile Strategy. Extracts, we took Legacy Virus, Wakandan Herb, and Research Station. And Secures, we went Gamma, Superpowered Scoundrels, and Mayor Fisk. So the idea was to have them both on the table and see if we get the leadership to switch. And other than that, I started with the secure style of Kingpin. It was okay. Kind of the game plan going into it. So the day before the tournament, we locally play on Friday nights, and the tournament was on Saturday. So I brought the list to Friday night game night and ran three games, and I went 3-0 pretty handily. I was able to play on Scoundrels and Gamma all those games, and just not really have much of a problem being able to score quickly and fast. So I was feeling pretty confident going into Saturday, and I show up to the tournament, and we had an odd number, Nick. We only had 13 turnout, and I drew the short straw and got the buy round one.
Yeah, so do we want to go ahead and talk about this? I know there's been some discussion as to how this kind of thing is handled. So we can talk about that if you want, or we can just move on and talk about it at the end.
I think let's talk about it now before we get into game by game. It's important to kind of see where the mindset was going into the other games.
Okay.
So for those of you that don't know, when you play an MCP event and you get the buy, you do get a victory, but you get 0 points on the board for your victory points, and you get no strength of schedule. And those are two of the tiebreakers that are used for placings. So with only 13 people playing and no points in any secondaries, you're going to have a hard time placing without any of those points.
Yeah. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's something that can be changed on Longshanks when you set up the tournament. I've only ever run a single tournament through Longshanks, so I'm not 100% on that. But I know that sort of the strength of schedule versus victory point conversation for how people place at the end of tournaments has definitely been a thing for discussion. And me personally, I feel like the points is sort of the better of the two, but I can see an argument for both. It's unfortunate, though, that the way we had it set up for this one, that it was worth zero either way.
Yeah, so basically, to your point, Nick, when it's victory points, you're kind of in control of your own fate, right? You're going to have three more games to be able to kind of set the pace and set the tone and score points and see where you place. With strength of schedule, there's no way for you to come back from that. Your strength of schedule was zero for round one, or whatever round you get the bye, and there's no way to come back with a higher strength of schedule. Where at least when you're considering victory points as a secondary score method, that if you overscore those other games, you may move up in the rankings. I'm not sure if it was from the LVO rules or why we switched to strength of schedule for this one, but the event we ran did have strength of schedule be the primary secondary tiebreaker. I don't really have an answer to which one's better, which one's worse. There's everyone has a good argument for both sides, right? It doesn't feel necessarily good to pull away from a game round four to intentionally only score 15 to overscore. On both sides, you could either lose on that next round, and is it fair to your opponent for you just to crush them the next round? It doesn't really feel in spirit of the game for it to be victory points.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean,
I think that's the argument for the strength of schedule side. But then on the victory point side, like I said before, you're in control of your own your own fate here. I know if I have zero, I can try to score more in my other games to try to come back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, the reason I maybe look at it as a points thing is I've never really had that experience where I see that, oh, if I intentionally don't score points this round, I will score more next round and I'm still going to win. I'm sure there have been games that have had that situation that I've played in, but I have never done something like that intentionally. But I could see where that would be a concern, especially at, you know, bigger, more competitive events where there's, like, realistic prize support on the line. I could see that being an issue, and that definitely takes away from the spirit of the game. So I get why strength of schedule might be a better representation of, like, ranking at the end of the tournament because of that. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. It's tough.
I think we had come up with some solutions, at least thought for discussion on this topic, is that I would like to see a player with a bye not only get the victory, but I would like to see them get either an average victory point and strength of schedule of the round of the other players, or maybe have them get an average of their other three game strength of schedule and their other three game victory point, average that into their total. Some way to not have someone not only have to sit for 2 hours or an hour and 45 minutes, but have such a crippling score going into the next round.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, either one of those, would probably, like, I think I would personally be fine with that, but I'm also not a very experienced tournament organizer. So my opinion is pretty moot on this point, I think.
Yeah, I think you'd hate to see someone. I'm sure there's a way to manipulate that too.
Yeah.
And overall, you don't want to have an event. You want the event to be unbiased. You don't want it to be manipulable. It feels bad to have voice a problem and not have an easy answer to it, but I thought it was just something we would bring up today that it doesn't feel good either way, and it's hard to come up with a good answer on that one.
Yeah. I mean, there honestly might not be a correct answer, just a correct feeling for a given situation with this one. So
yep, but that's neither here or there. So I had the round one bye, and we go into round two, and when I get to round two, I come up against my buddy Evan, who was playing Guardians of the Galaxy. We roll for priority and I win. I pick Secures because I'm playing CS. Why wouldn't I pick Secures? And we end up with Researcher and Scoundrels. And I'm feeling pretty. And yeah. I'm feeling pretty good.
I would have to say so.
Yep. Evan picked Thread. He picked 16, and he played Ghost Rider, Rocket, Groot, Star-Lord, Drax. I went Kingpin, Mysterio, Goblin, Toad, Lizard, and it was a Guardians of the Galaxy just got stomped. I was able to score 6 points round one. I scored 5 points round two. He had gotten Groot a little. So at the beginning of round two, I played Shadow Organization, which is a card I really love. I fell in love with this card playing X-Force. They have the same one called Pretty Sneaky Sis. For those of you that don't know, any CS player can spend 2 power during the power phase, and they have to be within range 2 to be targeted that round. It's basically super stealth without the keyword, and the reason that's important is because tactics cards like Marked for Death and Acute Senses don't get around it, because it doesn't have a keyword. It just says you must be within range 2 to attack. So you're almost able to overcommit yourself a little bit round 1, knowing that round 2 you're going to be in that range to not be attacked.
That so poor Rocket.
Exactly. So I knew in this game if I could, I feel like I say this every time we play against Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's like, just don't get deadly duoed and you might be okay. So I commit round 1. I think I took one shot from Rocket, but I know I'm not going to get deadly duoed this turn because he's not going to have the power on Groot. And round 2, I play Shadow Org, so I know going into round 3, I have to start worrying about Deadly Duo. But I was able to position Lizard to just start throwing them away from each other, because that's the best way to not get Deadly Duo'd. So Lizard throws Groot back. At this point, I have Kingpin on the midline. I throw him back, and by the time Evan gets to activate, I have basically Groot is in my deployment, and Rocket's in his. So I know I'm not going to get... Yeah. At this point, I was able to get everyone kind of in position. I have the researcher. I've scored it enough. I've locked down a majority of the scoundrels most of the game, and the ability to shut down the deadly duo turn altogether, he actually never got it off, and I was able to pull this game off.
Do you recall what the final score was for this one?
I was able to pull this game off 17-6.
Okay, pretty impressive.
Yeah, CS loves both of those, so it felt really good to get those missions, and I was able to not let him deadly duo was kind of the
nail in the coffin
for him there. I think Evan tallied it up in four rounds. I made five attacks, and to get power on Lizard for throws. Like I was in the zone.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, I think Guardians is probably not a great matchup for CS, just with how killy they can be, but if you prevented him from getting Deadly Duo off and kept Rocket and Groot apart all game, I think that was a very well done thing.
Yeah, and the fact that he dropped Ghost Rider hoping to get power to be able to do what Ghost Rider wants to do, but I wasn't attacking anybody, so I kind of was able to power starve Ghost Rider a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe Ghost Rider might not have been the correct drop there, but I know he's seen everywhere with Guardians, but it probably feels bad when you can't get that Hell on Wheels off, because I don't think I made a single attack round one.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, honestly, with CS. Just sit on points like a potato and throw people off. So
yeah, I was able to... I had a dazed Goblin, Toad was dazed, I think he actually got Mysterio too by round four, and then Kingpin was injured, and I think I had Lizard on one health, so I was quickly folding, but I was just able to score so quickly that it didn't matter, which is kind of how I have success with CS in the past, is just 1, 2, and 3, score as hard as you can and hope you can ride out the train. So
yep, that's what they do.
So 17-6 in my first game. It was the second game of the day. Felt pretty good. I'm placing kind of high, and we go into game three. And I come across our buddy Will for round three. And Will is playing his tried and true Spider Foes. So, Spider Foes versus CS. We get Gamma and Cubes. I had priority here. Will chose 15, which kind of threw me for a loop. I had like three different teams. I was kind of going back and forth. With the Cubes, I felt like I wanted Shadowland Daredevil, because with the ninjas, you can pick up two. But then I wasn't sure about having Shadowland and Kingpin for 8 when you can only have 15 threat. And I was really having a hard time deciding what squad to play here. At one point, I had Goblin and Dr. Ock, because I know I wanted well-laid plans. I was just kind of going back and forth on what to play here. But I ended up settling on running Shadowland, Daredevil, Kingpin, Lizard, Hood. And I had priorities, so I did the play where Shadowland, Daredevil... You move up with the ninjas, grab a cube, throw it back to Daredevil. Daredevil moved up to the midpoint, took the other cube. And Shadowland Daredevil was a powerhouse. Holy cow. He moved up with Goblin to make an attack. And he rolled pretty well. I think he had like 4 successes on it. He did physical. And I had 5 defense successes. The ability to count blanks with radar sense was... I had that on lockdown this game. Daredevil was not taking any damage. So that felt really good. I took an early lead here. I had 3 cubes, and I had the middle gamma and my back gamma. But Will had some... He just ran those spider foes down my throat. He was super aggressive, super attacky. At one point, I had used the leadership to pass one of Shadowland Daredevil's tokens, cubes, to Toad. And then I activated Toad later and ran... I borrowed one with Toad's ability off his card and ran Toad back, thinking I'll just hold my gamma with it. And Will expertly played well-laid plans here, because he ran Dr. Ock and Goblin and dropped them even farther back and was able to daze Toad as well with the damage from it. So I had to send Kingpin back to get those cubes, which was probably a mistake on my part, because then he was able to push into my gamma, which was letting him score 3. And at this point, I had committed Shadowland back to his gamma, but then he was able to keep parity because he had more cubes than I did. There was a late game choice he had to make. He had X23 on the middle gamma, and he was contemplating coming back to deal with Shadowland. But I think Will saw it, that if he had brought X23 back to me, I would have had priority next round. And he was bringing me a cube, and I would have won. So instead, he brought her to his enemy Gamma to overscore, and Will beat me 22-20.
Wow, very close game. High scoring, too.
Yeah, man, Will gets better every game we play. He's such a fun person. He's such a fun guy to play against, and real friendly. You never have a problem with him. Overall, it was a great game. It felt really good to be able to score 20, even though it was a loss. And it was just a fun game. I mean, I made the mistake to run Toad that far back. He played well-laid plans exactly where he should have. I had thought about bringing it, and I didn't. So good on him for capitalizing on the mistakes that I was making.
Yeah, you said he was running X23 in this game.
Yeah, he ran, I don't remember exactly who he had, but he had Goblin, Dr. Octopus, X23, Honey Badger. I think he had another two. I think he maybe was Nebula, but I'm not.
Bullseye or Nebula, probably.
Yeah, one of the two. I don't remember which, but
yeah.
Yeah, and I made a mistake, too. I should have saw the well-laid plans attack coming, and instead of running Shadowland Daredevil back to his Gamma, I should have probably double-tapped Dr. Oct to try to take well-laid plans offline, and I didn't, so...
Yeah.
Good on him for playing the scenario and capitalizing.
Yeah.
Good. So I'm technically 2-1, but with the point kind of thing, I'm more 1-1. We go into the last round of the day, and I pair against my buddy Ryan, who was playing Asgard. And so that was exciting because we had just got spoiled Scourge and Heimdall, so we were all excited for Asgard, and I played Asgard before, so I was excited to see what he was going to do with it. So we get to the table, and we roll priority. And we end up getting Gamma and Researcher.
Okay. So you got to play Gamma twice at this event.
I did, yeah. and again, in the same... I mean, CS just loves Researcher. We know that, right?
Yep.
He ran Sinister with his...
Ooh.
With his Asgard. So he had Sinister, Thor, Valkyrie, Enchantress.
Spicy.
And I went pretty wide. I just brought Kingpin and went wide. Mysterio, Cat. I had made a play where I knew I could hold the Researcher anyway. I did have Lizard with Monkey Brain, so I knew I could hold the middle Gamma round one. I knew I was going to take him off round two. So I set Cat super wide off my right flank, knowing I'm going to take a point of Gamma damage. But he had four characters and I had five. So I knew I was going to send Cat double long into his Gamma round two.
Yep.
And there wasn't really going to be much he could do about it. I had the power for Monkey Brain online, so I could either move to the back one and throw them off and score it that way and then bring Cat to the middle, or if he only left one character on the back, then I would just take it with the CS leadership. Overall, he was just kind of not able to activate in a situation that he could get ahead on what I was trying to do. He had brought Sinister and Enchantress to the middle. They activated, and I Monkey Brained at that point and pushed three of them off. I was able to come up with Kingpin and throw Thor off and really just kind of, I actually had the Researcher all three rounds of this game and I ran it directly to the evac, which I normally don't do. Normally when I play Researcher, I'll just kind of move it around to have it be disadvantageous for you of where you have to go for it. But I figured, you know, it's CS, they love Researcher. I'm just going to ram it right to the evac.
Yep.
And so we played three rounds, and the score was 22-7.
Pretty handy victory.
Yeah. With Gamma and Researcher, man, like, CS is so brutal. The only thing I think he could have done differently is maybe been more hyper-focused on attrition and maybe have some kind of R&D shenanigans to get Valkyrie and Thor charging turn one and get some lucky throws and attacks and dazes off. But the fact that I was able to go wider than him and have Cat basically be in the middle of nowhere, knowing I can activate her last and being able to score points that way. So I knew if I wasn't going to get the Researcher, I would send her for that because it's worth more. Or if I knew I had the Researcher, then I could send her to the back Gamma for another three. Really just let me be in control of the game on the objective side of it.
Yeah. So the real question here, I guess, is over the course of the three games you did you play the card?
So I only played them both against Will, and I chickened out and did not bring the card.
Aww.
I copped out. I know I played it against you once in a test game, but like, Will is such a great competitor that I didn't feel like I could play only four tactics cards, that I needed that fifth. And I did not get it off.
Sad noises.
But overall, it was fun to play CS. Generally, when I play control teams, I play Web Warriors. So it was fun to kind of walk in your shoes, I guess I could say, right? And playing, playing CS, and man, getting Gamma twice and Researcher twice was like, it almost
feels
made up,
good.
It almost made up for the fact that I got that round one by.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, Ryan Myers, who won our last league and our last tournament, shout out Ryan, he has been just crushing it. He was the only player to go 4-0.
Yep.
So he had the first spot. Once again, Will came through. Second place, we did use the strength of schedule, so he had the best strength of schedule out of the 3-1s. There was a third place, fourth place, and then I was the last place finisher with a 3-1 for fifth out of 13 on the day.
Okay, okay. So not what we were hoping for, but not awful. I mean, last tournament I played in, I went 0-4, so.
Well, I think you had a bye, right? 1-3?
Yeah, I had a bye. So I guess, was also playing Convocation, which I had never played before, so.
I think it's important to look at it, too, is that we did use the strength of schedule as the first tiebreaker. If we had used the victory points, like we had mentioned, I would have placed third. I had one more victory point than the third place finisher. And that was with only three games. But yeah, they both have their pros and cons, and it's hard to say which one's right, which one's wrong. But overall, it was fun playing CS. I wouldn't change anything about the roster. It felt great. Shadowland Daredevil has a place in Kingpins, because they're so control-focused, the ability to grab two extracts is pretty huge. Whether you're playing cubes or hammers, it's nice to be able to have that ability to go up on parity on extracts and then just play your secures and win. But other than that, I don't really feel like he has a ton of place in control-y Criminal Syndicate.
Yeah.
He was pretty tanky in the game I played. There were multiple attacks that I had more successes than dice.
Yeah,
I know Will had made two or three attacks, and I had on four physical defense, I had five successes. You know, you get that crit in there, or shield a couple blanks, and roll into another success. Is like, at one point, Will had asked me, he's like, "What is on the card that you're getting this many?" I'm like, "It's just an innate superpower, but it's, you know, it's he's really good at that."
Yeah.
And I had such inspiration from it. I think what I'm going to play for the next week or two until we get the voting settled on what I'm going to be playing, I'm going to put together a Killy Criminal Syndicate roster to play for a week or two.
Oh, that'll and, be fun.
Yeah, so I'm going to play Shadowland Daredevil with no Kingpin. Just to, I had a lot of fun playing him, and I want to play more of him, so.
Yeah, that should be fun. I've played Shadowland Daredevil once, I believe, and I can definitely see where you're coming from. He doesn't really do what Kingpin wants to do. That's not to say he's not good, but maybe a more attrition-focused CS that's not taking advantage of Kingpin's leadership is going to be better. I could see something where you play Shadowland Daredevil and you bring, I know Omnus has mentioned many times on his podcast, bringing Kraven as just a all-around good three-threat that fits under that Shadowland Daredevil, having his reroll, the Shadowland reroll, being able to give extra dice on their multiple targets, and just being a battery for expensive tactic cards too, because he's rolling so many dice. So
yeah, when you look at the leadership too, they have Killy characters in the affiliation.
Oh, definitely.
You can take Killmonger, you have MODOK, you have Hood. They definitely have potential to go the attrition route, so I'm gonna try it out. Yeah, overall it was fun. It was fun to play. We just kind of threw this one together kind of on a whim, because it came up quicker than normal, and you know, you weren't able to go, so it was just kind of, what can I play quick and easy and get some results in? So overall, yeah, CS is fun. Control is definitely my play style, so it felt good to play. I'm going to run a tangent here. I'm going to play Kraven in the attrition style Criminal Syndicate list. And my good friend Chad is getting a Web Warrior roster together. And I know he has, I know he has Amazing Spider-Man and Gorbox Peter Parker. So you all better be darn sure Fearful Symmetry is going to be in the list. And I my word is here. I will bring it if I play against someone that has Peter Parker. I'm not going to cop out like I did with Versatile Strategy. Fearful Symmetry will see the table if I have the opportunity. And I will actively go for it. So if I can get it off, I'll let you guys know. I'm excited. I'm going to try it. I think Kraven's probably better than Peter, but I still want to do it anyway.
We should really do a list of like our top 10 sort of gimmick cards that aren't tournament worthy necessarily, but are just like, if you do it, you should get an achievement. And I think Fearful Symmetry is definitely one of them.
There's so many, right, where it's just kind of like, I almost feel like that with Terra Genesis too. Like, while it's competitive and it does damage and gives you victory points too, like, it had enough jank where it was exhilarating to get it off. It felt good.
Yep.
I love playing those tactics cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Me, myself, I have been messing around with some Shield and also contemplating some Cabal. So not really sure where I'm going to settle yet for the next couple weeks, but I've got a few things I'm working on. So we'll see. I know one thing I really want to play with Shield. I don't want to do the herbs thing. That's not really something I enjoy doing. Just kind of a more general Shield list. Maybe bring like Luke Cage or Sam Wilson. Maybe Magic will be in there. For the Cabal roster, I'm kind of brewing. I want to play Sinister. I want to play Gambit.
I think you have a good shot there, Nick, that when you have the turn one herb score on Shield, is it effective? Yes. Does it work? Yes. But it's so easy to do, and once you've done it and kind of got the exhilaration from doing it, is it really rewarding? I know that's kind of how I like to have my games. I want to have a fun game. I want to have a rewarding game. And it's so easy to read, and so many people are easy to come up with counters to it now that, like, it's only going to work against a newer player. And is that really something you want to be doing to a newer player? I know I don't. I know I kind of come to a table with a social contract of, if they're brand new, making sure they enjoy the game. I'm like, hey, stand there while I score this and the game's over in three rounds before you know what's going on. It's not a feel good moment for me.
Yeah.
So good on you for kind of putting together a roster that doesn't revolve around it.
Yeah, I'm kind of honestly hoping that whenever we get whatever the next update for this game is, which, you know, I know AMG has said multiple times that there's not plans to do another card update, and I want to take them at their word, but at the same time, I've been around the block long enough to know that most games get updated, and we've only seen roughly half of the characters in this game get the updated card format, so there's definitely room for change there, in my opinion. But something I would like to see is maybe some slight erratas to a couple of the crises in the game. Obviously, Panic Grips being banned, that never feels good when you have somebody getting into the game and they buy Star-Lord only to find out that the crisis in the game or in the box is not one that they can play in the like a constructed style format for this game. So maybe some kind of errata to that, and then maybe an errata to Herb. I know, I forget who it was, one of the other podcasts mentioned having the A shape be, because, I mean, Herb is, in my mind, it's like capture the flag. So maybe having it where once you score it, it resets. And that way you have to keep interacting. You have to keep trying to get the herb and score it over and over. Like, you can't just pick it up, run it to your side of the board, and then just sit there for three turns with somebody that doesn't get moved around, like Juggernaut. I mean, that's a big thing in Convocation, is the Juggernaut herb play. So maybe whenever we get some more updates to this game, they'll do something like that. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, there's two things I'd like to see. I don't have a problem with Capture the Flag at all, Wakanda and Herb. I think I would maybe like to see it change that maybe they decrease the amount of points you score when you get it to your home, and maybe give 1 point per round that you have it, because not scoring until you get it there can be a little oppressive. And I think overall, in terms of just the Shield, if they FAQ'd or ratted the card that you just couldn't make the teleport while holding an objective, like every other tactics card, it would stop that one round herb play for Shield. I mean, look at Asgard, their card got changed. You've never been able to do it with Asteroid M or Mothership. And I get it, Shield's kind of like the faction that does that, but I think that's, well, an easy fix, right?
I'm trying to remember how it is that Shield actually scores it. They use Shield Mobile, right?
Well, no, because Fury, that does work too, and that's how they do it with Juggernaut and Hulk, but alternatively, you can use Fury to reposition with a tactics card, and okay, he can teleport with the objective right now. Oh,
that's
right.
Yeah, that's right. He can use
they have two different ways to do it.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, the Shieldmobile one is not the end of the world either. And like we said earlier, it is readable. I mean, I had a way to stop it immediately with Black Cat and Wong. I think Danger Room did an entire episode with how to stop it with each affiliation.
Yep.
And if you're worried about it, I mean, out of 10 characters, can you find room for one to stop something like that? I did. And in fact, I've done it in the last two events we've played, and I haven't come up against it. So it's like not the end of the world there for me.
Yeah.
But I would like to see the crisis changed in Star-Lord's box to one that is playable. I think there, I don't know what it would be to change that one, but it would be nice to see that one come back into play somehow and be less oppressive. But it was too easy for the attrition teams to get rid of the extracts and then just kill you, right?
Right. And I'll be honest here. I have never actually played Panic Grips because I got into sort of the more competitive side of this after it had already been banned. So I don't really have a lot of experience with it, but everything I heard about it, it was kind of egregious, especially with like Black Order and other teams that generate a lot of power. You just get it and then you just win in the middle of turn three or four. So, but that's enough of a tangent for today, I think. Do you have anything else you wanted to add today, John?
No, I don't think so. Overall, it was fun playing CS. I definitely play them again. I think we had some good conversation on the pros and cons to secondary scoring mechanics in tournaments. And I think from there, we will catch you guys next week.
All right. So with that, John, where can people find you?
I'm on all the main MCP discords as Incariel, Incariel. And you can reach both of us on our Facebook page, Versatile Strategy. That's where all the voting happens for what affiliations we're playing. And where can people reach you, Nick?
So I am on all of the various MCP discords as Waffle. I also have a painting page on Facebook where I post a lot of my MCP stuff that I painted. That is Blighted Brush Studios. Links for all of these will be in the show notes. And next week, we're going to be talking to Ryan, the guy who won this event, and kind of going over what his experience with this event was. But that's it for today, guys. So we'll see you around next week.